AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
Immigration, CFAP, acre battles, royal spat. Senate confirms Catherine Tai. Regan's our environment guy. Infrastructure, vaccines, Illini have a winning team. Input prices on the rise. China pulls a big surprise. Sing it with me, Davis. We didn't start the fire. We're going to talk about it all in the free-for-all about AgriTalk.
Live from Final Floryless Friday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all with panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and we welcome Carla Thiemann of the Russell Group. And right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, filling in for Chip, our beloved moderator, and altruistic editorial overlord, John Harris.
Altruistic these days, huh?
And beloved. Oh,
wow.
Altruistic and beloved.
It's wow.
A rare combination.
And
I just got to say.
Yeah?
It was always burning. I mean, since the world's been turning, okay?
It has been. I'm disappointed you didn't sing it all, though. There it is. No, it's amazing how much we've got going on this week, and we're going to churn through it all here with the free-for-all. As you mentioned, Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and, of course, Carla Thiemann from the Russell Group joining us this week as our third. Well, let's just get into it, Davis, because you're going to cover a lot of it in the news to kind of set us up here. What's going on?
You bet. Well, let's begin here, where U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, in opening talks with China Thursday, detailed Washington's problems with China, citing cyber attacks, China's crackdown on Hong Kong, and threats against Taiwan. These activities, he said, quote, threaten the rules-based order that maintains global stability. Yang Jiechi, a member of the Communist Party's ruling body, responded that the U.S. should examine its problems with racism and stop promoting its version of democracy around the world, saying, quote, the United States does not represent international public opinion, and neither does the Western world, said Yang in a statement.
Well, and not just in a statement, but went on for 15 minutes and asked the cameras to stay in the room for it. So
right.
they definitely had planned their spats yesterday in Alaska.
And what international public opinion is he talking about here? Well, I don't understand that. I mean, contrasted with international public opinion being on the side of China? Is that what he's saying?
I don't, well, maybe if you ask North Korea.
Another benevolent leader there, by the way.
Right.
The House clears two immigration reform measures, but both with tepid GOP support. In the first bill, the House voted 228 to 197 Thursday to create a path to citizenship for around 2.5 million undocumented migrants, including those known as Dreamers, who came to the country before the age of 19 and before Jan 1, 2021. The bill would also provide a path of citizenship for those in the country with temporary protected status, a type of humanitarian designation for immigrants from countries in crisis. And one thing that I think we can celebrate about these reform measures is the H-2A workers and agricultural migrant workers are maybe going to find a path to citizenship here, which will help everybody out.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that quite a bit, including here next with Jennifer Scheich, as it's a big issue for the pork industry.
The U.S. economic recovery is picking up steam as Americans increase their spending, particularly on in-person services battered by the pandemic, according to the Wall Street Journal. Restaurant and hotel bookings are up, air tickets are selling fast, and consumers have been spending more time in gyms, salons, and spas than since the pandemic began. The rising number of COVID-19 vaccinations, falling business restrictions, ample household savings, and injections of federal stimulus funds are fueling the surge. I've noticed in my own circle, John, everybody does seem just a little bit better looking, like maybe they've been to the gym, the salon, or the spa. How about you?
Finally got that long-awaited haircut. Well, and not only that, but meat sales are skyrocketing right now because people have been cooped up for a year now, and for better or worse, they're feeling more secure in going out and having those nice dinners.
Well, the National Grain and Feed Association this week urged lawmakers to prioritize improvements to U.S. freight transportation in the next surface transportation bill that are environmentally responsible and enhance the economic health of U.S. agriculture. In a March 17 letter to each member of Congress, NGFA and the other groups noted that, quote, Congress can achieve positive benefits for the environment while improving the economic competitiveness of the U.S. agricultural value chain. The two don't have to be mutually exclusive, do they?
No, they do not indeed.
Well, and finally here, the European Union's health agency said the COVID-19 vaccine produced by AstraZeneca PLC was, quote, safe and effective and did not increase the risk of blood clots, a decision that prompted four major bloc members to say they would resume inoculation campaigns. France, Italy, Spain, and Portugal said they would start vaccinating residents again after the European Medicines Agency on Thursday said new expert analysis concluded the benefits of using a COVID-19 vaccine produced by AstraZeneca outweigh its potential risks. John.
All right. Thanks, Davis. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Jennifer Scheich, who is editor of Farm Journal's Pork. And Jennifer, you heard Davis talk about that Farm Worker Modernization Act. That is something you have been tracking closely because it is of great importance to the pork industry. Most notably, I guess, because it would extend the H-2A visa program for year-round workers rather than just seasonal workers.
And that's something that's just so critical in the pork industry right now. We just, you know, the seasonal labor doesn't really work well. We need our dedicated workforce year round. And, you know, I think that the pork industry is excited about this because it's going to jumpstart more conversation on this issue and will help us get some reform that will really make a difference. You know, let's face it, our population that lives near hog farms is aging, and people aren't, you know, moving to those rural areas. And so we really need to find a workforce because they're not in those areas where our hog farms and our harvest facilities are at.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you note that it's starting a conversation that may be, as far as we get this round, we'll talk to some people a lot smarter than me later on in the show when we talk to Jim Wiesmeyer and Carla Thiemann in particular about the fate of this bill in the Senate. But it does not look... It's going to be a tough fight in the Senate to get this bill through there. In fact, the same bill was brought up in 2019, and it did not get a vote in the Senate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm anxious to hear what they have to say, too, because it's something we really need, and we've got to keep fighting for. And I'm not sure if this is going to be the time or not, but hopefully we'll get closer.
Yeah, just how tough is the labor situation for pork producers right now?
Well, you know, I worked on a story just a little while ago about kind of what the labor force is like. And everybody's saying, I mean, there are job opportunities on these farms. There are job opportunities in our plants. I mean, we need people. And so there's great money to be made working on these farms and in these plants. But we're just struggling to figure out how to get that, you know, how to get that workforce in. So there's a big need out there. And a big need for good workers who care about what they do. And I think that's one of the things that the pork industry has found is that oftentimes for a lot of the foreign-born workers that come into the U.S. pork industry, this is a great opportunity for them. And they're really good at their jobs and they work really hard. And so we want to, you know, attract a workforce that is excited for an opportunity like that. And so we're trying to do whatever we can to create a better opportunity for them here in the U.S.
All right, and you've been covering this extensively. Where can they check out your coverage of the H-2A program and the Farm Workforce Modernization Act?
Well, go to porkbusiness.com, and Jen Sorensen, president of MPPC, has a great opinion piece up there today as well.
All right, so check that out at porkbusiness.com. Jennifer, always great talking with you.
Yep, thank you.
Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. When we come back, it's the Friday free-for-all. Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, Carla Thiemann. We're all going to talk about, well, I think we're going to start with the China spat. We'll hit that next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Cheap herbicides may sound like a bargain, but they can turn out to cost more than a grower might think. Steve Gum, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is with us. Steve, why should growers focus more on what they risk losing than the dollars saved?
Well, Chip, it seems counterintuitive, but spending less money can actually cost growers more. The hits come from two sides. First, think about the front end, because if the herbicide is ineffective, they'll spend more money on another application. It'll likely have been less expensive to put down the single application of the effective herbicide to begin with. We see this all the time. And then on the back end, they may be costing themselves yield. Effective herbicides wipe out weeds fast, allowing the crop to grow with as little competition as possible. If you use an ineffective herbicide and your fields are littered with weeds at harvest, you're costing yourself yield and money.
Absolutely. Steve, what are the key considerations that will help us in selecting an effective herbicide?
Well, when it comes to selecting a herbicide program, look at the big picture. Choosing a herbicide with residual control and multiple effective sites of action will save weed management headaches down the road, and the right herbicide program can even pay back in yield.
Okay, so how can growers get into a cost per bushel mindset to make the right decision?
Well, less weed competition translates into more nutrients, sunlight, and water available for the growing corn crop, which leads to more bushels and extra revenue potential. So it's important to think about the cost per bushel. If the herbicide is a cheaper option but doesn't deliver the performance that maximizes yield, that cost per bushel will likely be higher overall. And if it's a product that delivers leading performance and drives higher yields, that cost per bushel will be lower overall. So it's important to not only think about cost per acre, but what is the return for that cost as well. And so if you think about 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron, you're looking at some pretty big ROI potential.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the right mindset to have right there. Thank you, Steve. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. Chip finishing up his vacation today. I'm John Harris filling in for him. And I know Jim Wiesmeyer is just chomping at the bit to get going with the Friday free-for-all. But hold on, Jim. Hold it back for just a little bit. We'll be back with it right after this industry spotlight.
Greg Sauter, founder of 360 Yield Center, joins us. And I'll bet, Greg, you're getting a little itchy to get the planter rolling. What's your priority as you make the final adjustments before planting?
Well, you know, Chip, on any warm March day, we like to think about planting soybeans. But right now, I want to be efficient on our small planting window and want to become extremely efficient on those inputs. You know, we have about 10 perfect days for corn planting. So really, those planters can never stop loading fertilizer on the end rows.
Yeah, so how do growers overcome that need for speed?
Well, you know, of course, we can add tanks to the tractor to increase capacity. And 360 designed a tank that carries 700 gallons on the tractor, and it's a really nice streamlined package. But then we designed and developed 360 Sprint. And Sprint brings that liquid or that nitrogen or starter out to the planter, and it fills it on the go. And it's a 300-gallon tank on the back of the John Deere Gator, and it has a boom with a nozzle in the front. It locks right in that planter, and we transfer liquid while that planter keeps humming along.
Man, it's like in-flight refueling for a jet, isn't it?
Well, it really is. You know, I see it more like auger carts on combine. Now it's all unload on the go, and I think it's even more important to keep that planter running. And with Sprint, a planter can get 30% more acres done each day.
Yeah, Greg, that can be a huge difference in some years. You mentioned that you also focus efficiency with inputs. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, in our planter, we're applying the nitrogen starter with the planter, and we're putting that fertilizer, you know, right along the seed trench in a band. And no question in my mind, banding is twice as efficient as, say, spreading in a broadcast. So when we're using 360 banded and 360 dash, it becomes an ideal way to place fertilizer for the most efficient uptake in that plant. Growers can definitely learn more about these details at 360yieldcenter.com.
Excellent. Thank you, Greg. That's Greg Sauter, founder of 360 Yield Center.
All right. Thanks, Chip, for that industry spotlight. And Jim, we're going to go. Before we do, Jennifer Scheich, who from Pork Business Editor, said she missed something in her report this morning in the first segment, a very important note that she meant to include, which was go Illini. which I wholeheartedly agree. All right, Jim, now it's time to go. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmers Policy Analyst, joined by Sean Haney of Real Agriculture. And, of course, welcome back, Carla Thiemann from the Russell Group. Welcome all. Jim, we talked during the break. You want to start off with all these China buys. Why do you want to talk about that first?
Well, even though they haven't been a market factor because it was actually bought many months ago, and you have to look at the corn spreads for that and, you know, what's happening in Geneva to, you know, tell the full story. But they bought a little over 3.8 million tons of corn from the U.S., quote, this week. That's about 153 million bushels. And, you know, and when you know, based on census data, Pro Farmer estimates corn exports to all countries at 1.232 billion as of March the 11th. And with outstanding sales, excluding last week's sales to China, we're already near USDA's total 2021 forecast for corn. So it looks like they're too low on the corn export forecast, John.
Which you've been saying for a while now.
That, and also remember the World Board early on forecast total China corn imports at 7 million metric tons. We said at the time that was going to be a big miss, and now it's a laugher because now it's 25 million tons or higher. And they, and the reason the World Board gave last summer was, you know, China had not lifted its TRQ for corn. They never really did. So USDA bombed that one, John.
Wow. Carla, what do you make of these seemingly mixed messages coming out of China? You've got these continued big ag buys, particularly in corn. At the same time, you've got the tough messaging that they deliberately carried out in Alaska yesterday.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a big test for our newly confirmed trade ambassador, Catherine Tai, who, by the way, was confirmed by unanimous support, 98-0 in the Senate, the first Biden cabinet nominee who received unanimous support, which was somewhat more, it was more customary in previous administrations. I guess Tom Vilsack, for example, was UC'd in the Obama administration. Just doesn't happen as much anymore. But she is going to have a big task ahead of her in terms of dealing with China. And for those of us who watched her confirmation proceedings, it was obviously a really big topic. And she didn't necessarily put a lot of her cards on the table. She really avoided specifics, in particular on tariffs and how she was going to handle China. So I think a lot is going to be seen, and having her in place is a key additional factor with how the United States deals with China moving forward, particularly on the agriculture side.
Yeah, what prompted that unanimous vote? Because you're right, there has been at least one no vote. I guess out of snarkiness from the Republican side on each one of these nominees. And so what prompted all of the Republicans in the Senate to go along with the Catherine Tai vote?
You know, I think that goes to her background. She was a career civil servant at USTR. She was a trade lawyer. She worked on the Ways and Means Committee in the House side and just generally is viewed as not a partisan person and a really effective trade tactician and someone who has really deep subject expertise. She also has a great degree of experience actually negotiating with the Chinese directly and speaks fluent Mandarin. So she's going to dig in really quickly, close to no learning curve for her. So it'll certainly be fascinating to see what she's able to do, and certainly adds a lot of depth of experience to the team.
Sean Haney of Rural Agriculture, what do you make of the Chinese show in Alaska yesterday, very deliberately making sure the cameras stay in the room and that they can go on this 15-minute rant about the United States?
Yeah, show is a good way to put it, John. You know, it was kind of, you know, we had 4 years of President Trump thinking about, you know, the showmanship of meetings and made-for-TV events. It was sort of like the Chinese delegation reversed that heat on the U.S., yesterday, using, you know, it was not exactly any sort of a discussion. You know, one of the quotes I heard was, the U.S. does not have the authority to speak to China from a position of strength.
Yeah.
It was pretty harsh. You know, and of course, from Canada's perspective, we had a trial earlier today for one of the two Michaels. The trial concluded in one day, like many Chinese trials do. The other trial will be on Monday, where you know, almost 100% chance they will be found guilty. So this is a very nasty time. As mentioned, it will be very, very much a test. In terms of commodities, though, I think the reality is China's proving they need the commodities. And sometimes we intertwine this relationship maybe a little bit too much. Right now, they need these commodities.
Yeah, indeed. Of course, the U.S. has been taking tough talk against China for some time now. Of course, from our perspective, we see it's a little hypocritical in what they've brought back. But, Sean, from your perspective, does this imperil those discussions, or is this just kind of everybody getting a little steam off and then we'll head into the real talks?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if it's about steam. I think it's really about positioning and who is going to be the world power broker when it comes to social and economic kinds of issues. The we're going to see a different trend. We're seeing a much harder China here than we have seen in the past. Catherine Tai was referenced there. Her being able to speak fluent Mandarin is going to be an asset in this case to not to get lost in any sort of translation.
Yeah, that is an advantage.
That is a big positive, I think. I think that cannot be that's been undervalued or not mentioned enough, I think, in some of these talks.
All right, Jim, what are we looking to get here? What is a win for the U.S. out of these first talks here in Alaska?
No, I think this was just an angst meeting, venting from both sides. So I don't think we can take much away from that. We know they sparred. This is the frustration showing of China because they know they're going to be the world economic leader in not too many years. And it's like the guy in the new car behind you wanting to get ahead. He's impatient.
Yeah. And John, I think that the thing here is that, you know, the phase one deal, there was, like, I'm not underscoring it at all. There's some good stuff that's in there. And obviously the commodity, the grain contract part of it is something that's very interesting. Or the AgriTalk audience loves that part of it. But the things to be worked on next are super, super difficult. And this gets extremely complex on any sort of negotiation going forward.
And real quickly, Sean, is that phase one real or is it just as good as the need in China is for those commodities?
Well, it's sort of like any trade deal at this point where, you know, Canada's been victim to that a lot where, you know, you have the deal, here's the text, but then the politics get into it. And so I think, you know, it's as good as what China needs for commodities for that given year or month.
All right, we're talking the free-for-all. Talking China, we'll move on to some more topics when we come back on AgriTalk with Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Carla Thiemann on the Friday free-for-all. Stick around. This is AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And we're joined by Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, what's going on today?
Well, John, another huge daily corn sale to China, obviously 800,000 metric tons. That pushes the weekly total to almost 3.9 million metric tons, or you know, to convert that to bushels, it's about 153 million bushels. So just huge week of corn sales. We are seeing some strength in the corn market today, but really the price response has been tepid to that overall. And I think the bigger reason for the price response probably today is that the soybean market's up, and we're seeing double-digit gains there. The meal market is participating to the upside, as is soy oil. So the soy complex is leading corn or pulling corn to the upside this morning, probably more so than the sales announced to China.
Really? Okay. What about wheat?
Wheat market's under pressure, so it's reluctant here. You know, we got all the recent snow and rain across the central and southern plains, recharged soil moisture ahead of that green up the spring for the winter wheat crop, and that's putting pressure on the market. We just don't have a bullish fundamental factor outside of any crop concerns to drive the market higher at this point.
All right, and livestock?
On the cattle side yesterday, key bearish reversals in many of those contracts for live cattle. and some of the feeder cattle as well. And we're seeing follow through this morning. So, you know, it sure does look like short-term technical tops are in place there. Not a good finish to the week after we had a pretty good start the first three-plus days. Hog market continues to extend to new contract highs there. And while the gains aren't strong by any means right now, that market does continue to have a firmer tone.
All right, thanks, Brian. That's Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by Bayer. For a strong start, trust the tried and true protection of Corvus and harness extra herbicides from Bayer.
And welcome back to the free-for-all on Friday on AgriTalk. I'm John Harris, filling in for Chip, who will be back with us on Monday after his vacation this week. And as always on the free-for-all, we got Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer, Sean Haney from Real Agriculture up in Canada, and this week, Carla Thiemann from the Russell Group. Carla, let's turn to you as we shift the conversation to the action taken in the House yesterday on a couple of immigration bills. I guess the one most important to agriculture is the Farm Workforce Modernization Act. With a concentration there on a provision that would extend the H-2A worker program beyond just seasonal workers and allow for a year-round workforce, particularly of importance to the dairy and pork industries, among others. First of all, Carla, this passed the House in 2019, died in the waiting for a vote in the Senate. Is there any more hope for this thing moving forward this time in the Senate?
Well, first I would note it did pass with bipartisan support in the House both in 2019 and this time around. In the Senate, we have a different cast of characters in the Judiciary Committee, which is where this bill would go through. Senator Feinstein stepped down, so Dick Durbin is now the top Democrat from Illinois, and he's long been a champion and friendly to provisions like this. And you have Senator Grassley, who has come back as the ranking member. It was Senator Lindsey Graham the last go round. I have not seen any public statements from Senator Grassley, but generally he has not been as supportive of immigration measures moving forward. And so I think, you know, the big question is, are Democrats going to try to move this on more of a partisan basis out of committee and hope that they can get broader support on the floor? Senator Durbin has indicated that he does not believe that there is support for full-blown immigration reform, but he's open to having discussions about things like this where there is the potential to have bipartisan support. So maybe there is a very, very narrow path for something like this to slip through, but with other higher priority items like infrastructure and voting rights on the agenda, I just don't know where this will fall in the priorities.
And then the other side of this was a provision allowing citizenship for Dreamers, right?
Yes.
All right.
Which has, you know, obviously pretty broad support, but I don't know that how eager the Senate is going to be to expend the tremendous political capital that it would require to move this bill.
Jim, what's your take on this? Because, again, this is something that is of great importance to a lot of sectors in agriculture.
Well, the reason why Grassley would probably be against this is he remembers the last time we had comprehensive immigration reform under the Reagan administration, and Reagan told his fellow Republicans one time only for amnesty. So he's not forgetting that. Lindsey Graham said there's no pathway for anything right now because of the C word at the southern border, either a crisis or challenge. I'll let you determine which party, you know, goes on that. And even Dick Durbin yesterday acknowledged that southern border, you know, complications what is complicating the prospects for even the narrow legislation. So I think it's bad timing on this open border that we're seeing in the South, John.
Which
the odds are not good now again.
Yeah, which to a certain degree I get, but on the other hand, some of the provisions in this would help alleviate some of those crisis or challenge or whatever word you want to use issues on the border by providing a more orderly way for immigrants to cross the border legally.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Sean, go ahead
Absolutely.
And jump in there.
Well, you know, I think Jim mentions the timing, and he may very well be correct. It's something to follow here. There's been reporting this week a lot about, you know, the huge, intense, record-breaking volume of people trying to cross the border. Some have said that that is a pent-up demand because people were camped out, and it was a stockpiling of people essentially trying to think about when they would try to cross. It'll be interesting to watch those numbers here over the coming months. Does that create more momentum? Or is this just sort of a flash in the pan, sort of some data that will jump out on a historical chart? I'm following that closely.
Yeah, and Sean, I was watching some NBC coverage of this last night, and they went down on the border. We're talking to some of the miners that were trying to cross, and they said they had no idea about the political transfer, or the political change in Washington, which I find pretty incredible. That I mean, how do you have this surge timed with the change in administrations, yet they're claiming that they have no idea that there's been a change in administration? That seems kind of incredible to me.
Yeah, I would follow your skepticism there, John, as well. That doesn't I would find it hard to believe with all of the people that were camped out, or as people move up from places like Honduras, that that news doesn't travel to those groups. That would really, really surprise me.
John, your first mistake was watching NBC News, and your second one is go back to what Biden said as he ran for president. He basically said, come, we're going to have an open border. Now he's saying, just don't come now. So it's a timing issue. So the transparency now is clear. We do not have a secure border, period.
But it also is the issue that there is obviously problems in these countries that is prompting these people to send their children unaccompanied through Mexico to come to the United States. And ultimately, you know, well, first of all, should we be intervening in the problems in those countries in order to address our own border issue?
Well, it's a humanitarian crisis. I don't think there's another word for it. Of course it is. It's a shame what's going on. But now it's mucked up with politics that, you know, for both political, parties, and the lack of transparency of not being able to put the cameras in these units holding these children. But when Trump was president, they had an open door policy of, you know, putting those cameras in. So it's just what we've seen. They talk one thing as far as being bipartisan, but they govern another.
Yeah, the issue starts long before people get to that border. Like right now, in terms of American news, it's about that border because that makes sense. But this issue starts long before that, many, many miles away in countries like Honduras and some of the things that have gone on there that are forcing people to flee for their safety. Obviously, there's the opportunity of America, but there's also you're just trying to save their lives from that standpoint.
Yes.
So again, we've addressed that, you know, there's a need for these provisions in agriculture. There's a need for these provisions to address the current crisis at the border and to have a more long-term solution for this immigration issue. So, Carl, I'll throw this to you first. It doesn't look likely that the current provisions are going to make it through the Senate. There doesn't seem to be an appetite for comprehensive reform. So are we just forever stuck in this holding pattern?
You know, the joke in Washington is at least in the ag circles, is that being an immigration lobbyist is one of the best forms of job security here, because hope springs eternal that there is going to be immigration reform at the beginning of every Congress and administration, and ultimately it just falls further and further down the priority list. And, you know, Congress, either the Senate or the House, can't get its act together and muster up enough bipartisan support. And I think, you know, we're pretty much headed towards that same direction this go around. Obviously, an important and critical issue to ag, and there are plenty of agriculture groups and advocates that keep plugging away every single year to try to get this done. But I don't think that this is the year. I don't think it'll happen in this Congress.
Yeah. Not good news. All right. Well, let's turn the corner here a little bit. And Sean, I know you wanted to talk about some vaccine issues. Before we get into the specific issues you want to talk about, we do want to, I think all of us on here support the notion of getting your vaccine. I know, Jim, you've had both rounds already.
Yes.
I'm one shot in here. I've got my second shot scheduled. Producer Big Apple Joe, you've had your first round, right? He's nodding his head yes, so he's one round in. So again, we all here see the importance of getting that shot done and building up that herd immunity. But that's been a challenge there in Canada, hasn't it, Sean?
Oh yeah, we're down. I think we're like 70th in the world per capita in terms of vaccine rollout. We saw yesterday, the U.S.
We're giving you the ones that aren't good enough for us.
Yeah, the AstraZeneca vaccine is not approved in the U.S. yet, so you had 4 million doses, so why not give them away? Or they're loaned. My understanding is that Canada and Mexico will have to provide some of those doses back. But you know, Canada and Mexico really in a tough spot with the vaccine. I've said for a long time, the sooner that countries like the U.S. get fully vaccinated, the better the rest of the world will be in terms of getting some of the supply. I think it's a great gesture. To be honest, I'm a little bit embarrassed that we have to sort of go to Washington and beg for some doses because we've bundled the rollout so poorly in this country. But I think it speaks very much to to a positive, great relationship between the three countries and how important the North American economic zone is. It's good for the U.S. economy if Canada and Mexico are back to full speed in terms of back to normal, just like themselves.
Well, and real quickly, in particular, the livestock processing industry, which you're seeing challenges in.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's the contrast, right? So JBS sends out a press release this week talking about how by the end of this week, they're going to have a third of their U.S. workforce with at least one shot. I asked JBS about, you know, how they're making out in Canada, and they basically use the words like waiting and think, you know, essentially not really sure anybody's been vaccinated because they wouldn't even give me a number. So that just shows you the compare and contrast between the two countries on getting important people like meat workers vaccinated.
Yeah, and that's not good news for either side of the border.
Absolutely not. We need to get people like these meat workers vaccinated so they can feel safe in these plants and keep the chains rolling.
All right, it's the free-for-all rolling with Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Carla Thiemann. We'll be back to talk more right here on AgriTalk.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Crazy. Producer Joe, I think we need this bump every Friday. You cannot not smile listening to that mashup. That is tremendous. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm John Arith. In for Chip Flory. We'll be back on Monday. It's the Friday free-for-all with Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Carla Thiemann. And we're going to get – Jim tells me he has an update on CFAP. We're going to get to that in a little bit, so stay tuned. Don't spill the beans yet, Jim. Can you hold on to it for just a little bit?
Sure.
All right. Because I want to get into Carla, in our pre-show discussion, brought up a good point that Carla, you say that we've gotten past kind of the top nominees, and now we see who the real doers are that are coming into this administration. So who are some of those doers, and what does it tell us?
So we have at USDA, in particular, we have a number of our deputy undersecretaries in place, but I'm really keeping an eye on who the undersecretaries are going to be who get named. Those are the folks who are running the specific mission areas at USDA. And to date, none of them have been named, but I'm told we're pretty close to seeing a number of those folks actually break loose from the vetting process inside the White House. We do have a deputy secretary nominee, Dr. Jewel Branagh, who is currently the Commissioner of Agriculture in Virginia. And I expect her confirmation hearing will probably be held in the month of April in the Senate. But the other key post to really watch out for, I think the last time I was on this show, I talked about this. The ambassador, as you think about China and the initial discussion we had, which looms large for agriculture and the entire U.S. economy, who is going to be the ambassador to China, the U.S. ambassador to China, probably one of the toughest jobs in this administration. Traditionally, the past two administrations have had someone who has had a strong agricultural knowledge and background, Governor Branstad of Iowa in the Trump administration, Senator Max Baucus from Montana in the Obama administration. I have not seen a lot of names floated for that post, and I've not seen a single ambassador nominee named yet. So that might be a little bit down the road. But when you think about actually filling out that team in figuring out what is the entire approach with China, that person is obviously key. And then the other one, which is obviously a really key position for agriculture, is who's going to be the ag trade ambassador at USTR. And I would say we're probably 5 to 6 months from having that person named.
Oh, just really? Wow.
Given the length of probably summer, late summer, I would imagine we'll have a name there, maybe sooner than that. But just given the rhythm of how things have been going, I think we're a little ways away from that.
Jim, I heard you react to that. Does that concern you that it's going to be that long to replace Greg Dowd there at USTR?
No, he put it in good stead. And it took a little while for Greg to come on in. But I think the good career people at USTR in the ag area are, you know, pretty good. I think they can handle the shop. I will tell you that I think Biden wanted Rahm Emanuel for ambassador to China. But he got a lot of pushback from the far left that some people call progressives in the Democratic Party.
Well, and boy, I know we want to be a little more forceful with China, but Rahm Emanuel's downright combative. That would be an interesting choice.
It would be. I'd love it. I mean, at least he speaks his mind.
Well, you may run into a situation like we had in Canada where China basically kicked out our ambassador. It was the former one, not the current one. So if there's going to be that combative, that's the kind of relationship that's going on here right now.
Wow.
Yeah, well, that's how you run for president if you do that. He could run for president then if he gets kicked out.
Yeah. Indeed. All right. Well, I want to hit a couple more topics real quickly while we have time. One, Jim, you brought up the poll in Iowa asking Iowans if they thought Chuck Grassley should run for reelection.
Yeah, and a significant number said no. So I think we're going to have him on AgriTalk, Monday? It'll be curious to get his response to that. I can imagine how he will respond to that Des Moines Register poll.
And so then who runs? And in the break, Carl, I'm going to call you out. You made an interesting comment on this. Jim said, rumor is maybe Tom Vilsack will run for that seat. And your response was?
I in jest said maybe a Vilsack. Obviously, the Vilsacks are beloved in Iowa. And I think a lot of Democrats would be happy to see one of the Vilsacks on the ticket. But there's a great bench of other folks. We talked about Cindy Axne. Also, Abby Finkenauer is a rising star. Yeah. I don't know what her next step is going to be. And Rita Hart, who's still contesting the congressional race as well.
All right. Well, before we run out of time, Jim, what's the latest on CFAP? When are we going to see our money?
Bottom line, CFAP 3 with, you know, most of the payments, that $13 billion. Vilsack said early on, late March to early April. I've been told Debbie Stabenow and her staff, in quotes, both in office and at USDA, are wanting some changes. I don't think how they can change the $20 per acre payment via the coming CFAP 3 payments. When we interviewed Vilsack on AgriTalk earlier, he mentioned the up to $2.3 billion in the waning days of the Trump administration for CFAP-AA, the additional aid, could be a higher level, around $3 billion. And if so, I think other producers and groups who did not get funding in 1, 2, and 3, you know, could see funding, John. That's the best I can update you.
Like biofuels, which Vilsack mentioned like specifically a couple of times last week.
Absolutely, he did.
All right. And you mentioned Senator Stabenow's staff, and I think it is worthy of noting, as you and I have talked on DC Signal of the Noise podcast, that she has staff at USDA in this particular area right now. Some of her former staff made the transition, and so there is some pretty direct communication between Senate Ag and USDA on how this money and how that CFAP program is going to develop.
Absolutely. absolutely. You know, within the FSA, you know, Farm Service Agency.
All right. So keep tuned. Do you think they're still going to hold to that late March, early April timeline, even with these changes?
Well, I think so. Yeah. I don't think it'll be May. I don't think it'll be, May. Let's hope not.
All right. Let's hope not indeed. Well, hey, it's been a great conversation. Carla Thiemann from the Russell Group, thank you so much for joining us again. You're welcome back anytime. I really appreciate your contributions here on the show.
Thank you.
Jim Wiesmeyer, we'll be talking later today on the DC Signal to Noise podcast, so be sure to join us at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Central on the AgriTalk Facebook page, and we'll talk about this a lot more in depth.
And how I couldn't get a taxi in Arizona because of it pays not to work now.
I can't wait to hear that story. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture up in Canada, thank you much.
Hey, everybody enjoy the tournament.
All right, come back this afternoon for Ted Seifert.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.